The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAR on a Monday. It's myself and Conan here in studio. Hello to all our YouTube viewers. And you know the way, Conan, we have been getting really excited about the Provincial Club Championships and the All-Ireland Club, and it's just fantastic time of the year. Can't say enough good things about it. But the football's as good as over. Dr. Crokes are going to win it. We might as well get all negative about this. I'm just so... Came out of Newbridge yesterday, all a pep in my step after Portlaoise winning, and then heard about this. 5:20... against St. Finbar's, 5:20 from play, 11 different scorers in horrible conditions. Sure, it's all over. Blow it up, ref. Dr. Crokes have it. They're all, like, I mean, Cara Finn were equally impressive against decent opposition as well, but Crokes just seem to be on a different level.
I was just going to say, I think there's a wee team in Galway who might have something to say about that. Without Ian Burke, they ran up 4:22.
Yeah, and Dahi Burke, not that he'd be on the score sheet. Let's get your point.
Yeah, come on. Like, yeah, the Crokes looked amazing. I was following your Twitter account. Like, I was loving it. You were so obsessed with Portlaoise. It was like a young kid just watching his heroes play for the town again. And you had little poems and everything going around.
Well, it wasn't really little poems. This was an old joke years ago. There was a Father Brown in the town, and there was a Father Brophy, and there was also a Father Jim. So get it in, said Father Jim. We'll win the trophy, says Father Brophy. Go on to town, said Father Brown. But it was a great win for Portlaoise. We'll talk about that in a minute, because it just, like I said last Thursday, they just had to win that, and they played like they had to win it, which was absolutely fantastic. Fantastic. But this is one thing I'm just a little bit confused about with this Dr. Crokes, because I didn't watch this. You watched more of this. I just saw the highlights on the GAA website, or the GAA Twitter account. 5:20 from play. How is that possible? Like, how can you not foul? How can you concede, for example, 4:19 and not pull some, not get ticked and actually foul someone rather than let them score and play? How is it possible? Like, are Finbar's that useless at defending and have no pride in themselves that they'd rather you often say let them kick it from play rather than the free, but Jesus Christ, if they're after scoring 20 points from play, like, maybe you might foul them out of being ticked. Are Dr. Crokes so slick and moved the ball so well, and there's evidence to say that that's the case? Like, for Dahi Casey's goal, it was absolutely unbelievable ball across from O'Leary.
Yeah.
Right into his path, didn't break stride, bang into the back of the net. Then you see Johnny Buckley's goal, which was an absolute farce of defending. So you have Johnny Buckley coming through, throwing a dummy shimmy, and then it wasn't even a dummy solo. It was almost fainted to kick it off his left and soloed it on his right, sold another fella and then scored. That was embarrassing for Finbar. So can you tell me, are Dr. Crokes that slick, or were Finbar's just an absolute joke?
Yeah, like, they are very slick, and like all the best club teams, they keep it moving. No, like, it's almost like no touch, like, just keep the ball going. And like, yeah, that goal you talked about, Dahi Casey's, like, the 30 seconds before, whatever it was, brilliant watching it. Almost like, you know, Man City and something. The ball was just being moved around and these players are being dragged out of position, but no Crokes player had a touch on them, and then suddenly that one pass opened the whole thing up and a great finish. But the Buckley one was, like, there was 3 points in it at the time. This was, like, you know, the game was right in the melting pot. This first half, it's defenders' conditions. Like, you know, it was raining, so you think somebody would at least slide behind someone. Buckley just... It wasn't even dummy in the first time. It was like he just refused the shot, and then it was on the
come back in. It wasn't even a pronounced dummy. It was just, I'll turn back in this way.
So I think like a lot of good teams, like Cara Finn, like, you know, they move the ball well. They don't go into contact too often. But that was very bad from Finbar's. Like, they weren't close enough. Like, the Buckley goal sort of summed the whole thing up. And yeah, I think once Crokes got ahead, then it was probably the lad's season's over. It's just like, who cares anymore, really? Like,
yeah, you know? But that's not good enough either. Like, we talked about Finbar's brilliant record outside of Cork last Thursday. Well, this team isn't definitely living up to that, because that's just... 5:20 from play, 5:20 scored, 5:20 from play, that's unprecedented. maybe I'm wrong, but I've never in my life heard a stat like that.
Yeah.
I didn't think, if you were to tell me, is that possible? I'd be like, no, because there'd be a defender would get tick and someone would get a belt or a pull down, or there'd be, you know, there's no pride in them at all to concede that kind of score from play.
What if I asked you, was it possible that there was a club team with Colin Cooper on the bench and Jordan Kiley and all the minor winner on the bench?
Well, that's interesting. There is a club team there like that, and their speed of their movement and their passing and their diagonal balls and everything. But interesting you mentioned Colin Cooper. He came on and scored 3 points from play. Saw one of them. He set up the goal as well with a lovely flick up, and it was Michael Burns' goal. Yeah. A lovely flick up off the ground. But the selector Edmund O'Sullivan was asked about why Colm isn't playing. And he says, I'd be lying if I said Colm is happy coming on. Of course not. The same with Jordan Kiley, Michael Potts. Now he's putting Colm into the same category as the two young lads. They kind of have to serve their time. The reason Colm isn't starting is because he was sick against Anguiltacht and Tony Brosnan came in for him and kicked 114. So that's the way it is. Fair enough, but there's another five positions that Gooch can perfectly play in. So like, they're obviously pitting Gooch straight against Tony Brosnan, who came on and got all that scores. And I'm like, that's not. Gooch can play anywhere across, except for the two wings. He can play 11, 13, 14, or 15. Well, 11, 13, or 14.
Yeah, like, no, 11, 13, 14, 15. Go for it. Like, and like, Tony Brosnan had a great game, but I thought that would have put pressure on the other five forwards. Like, Jesus, this boy scored 114. So no, once Cooper comes back, we're in trouble.
It's Gooch versus our man Tony Brosnan, and we're right behind Tony Brosnan here. Kieran O'Leary obviously has the 14 jersey sewn up. He only got a point yesterday, but like, I mean, he just does so, his movement is so good, and maybe that's what they want. Maybe this is a little, maybe Colm Cooper is the Daniel Sturridge of this Crokes team.
Hang on, I have to stop you there. Come on.
They want movement. I'm not talking about a legendary status. I'm talking about Sturridge doesn't have that fluid swapping of positions and movement that maybe Klopp wants. So he picks three very... what's the word I'm looking for? Three very fluid players up there. And maybe Crokes want this kind of total football and loads of movement, loads of options, and Gooch's movement isn't good enough. I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah. Like that goal you talk about, though, the Michael Burns one, was he comes out to number 11, scoops it up, and then he shakes off a defender, pings it into the corner forward, goes on the run, pops it off again.
Like got it back again, yeah.
But a 13, 14, and 11 in there.
That was exhibition stuff at that stage. So that's when they had completely given up. And in fairness, Gooch absolutely thrives in those conditions. There's no doubt about that. And one thing I wanted to mention about the GAA highlights on Twitter, because they're great and they're shite in the same way. Like, it's great to have them and they show good replays. At, let's say, 30 seconds, you see that full Gooch set up, the ball in, the ball across, and then the Michael Burns. So you have 30 seconds and you get the whole move in. Now, they'll only show maybe three scores throughout the half showing the full move of it. Then at half time they'll show the highlights of the whole first half, and they'll condense it into 2 minutes. So it's almost like a machine gun, boom, 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 boom. You're seeing all these scores. You're, like, you're losing your you don't see the build up. You don't see anything. At the end of the game, then they will show in the highlights of the whole game and put that into 2 minutes. Why does it need to be condensed to 2 minutes? Now, you can explain internet video kind of rules, because there are rules, and I know about them from videos I do, that technically on Facebook and these things, people don't pay attention more than 2 minutes, isn't that it? So ideally a video would be a minute and a half, 2 minutes. But I'm talking about the highlights of a match, and people who want to go see them are not the people who are going to be like losing their concentration after 2 minutes. I'd watch 10 minute highlight package. You have these highlights, put them up there. I'll watch them. You know, maybe they're on GA Go, but I'm not in the habit of using that as much.
Yeah, but like these are studies based on, like, you know, what people are watching on average, but it's nothing to do with the relative video that you're watching. Like, you're a person who wants to watch the GA videos. Everybody following the GA account.
And it's a GA account, yes.
Yeah, want to watch that video. Like, you know, the biggest videos in the world are longer than 2 minutes. Like, you know, all the ones that went on the internet. Like, they're far beyond 2 minutes, and they're not sticking to these little guidelines that people would stick to.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you have good content, people will watch it or listen to it, whatever it is. Like, this show's an hour long. Like, we're on the internet, do you know? Like, but if you were talking about your guidelines, it'd be like, let's snip this up, let's get 5 minutes tops, and we'll move on to something else. Like, yeah. Do you know? But because this is such a great show, people listen.
But the message to GAA is to don't condense 65 minutes of highlights into 2 minutes. It's illogical.
Yeah.
It's absolutely illogical. Stop doing it. Spread it out. Make it easier on yourselves. And let's see if there's a brilliant point, who gave the pass for that point, how it came about, and or else what's the point?
Yeah.
You're just seeing a ball fly over the bar, and then within a second you're seeing another ball fly over the bar. Sure, yeah. It's completely worthless.
Don't see a replay of it. Now, I know they put out the individual ones for the special scores that they think are worth it, but in those highlights they never show a replay of the point, so you don't get an hour angle or an hour close up. And as you say, you missed the 5 passes that led to it, the most important passes sometimes.
Yeah, no, exactly. So Cara Finn scored 4.22, so they're into a 5th Connacht final in a row, so they've really been absolutely dominant in Connacht. 2.10 they scored at half time. I think what did Clonagale have, 3 points or something? Donny Shine was gone on a black card and Ulton Harney was on a red. Game over. So anyone watching that in TG Cahir would have just turned it off at that stage. Like, I mean, there's no doubt about that. But I think it was, oh, we'll talk about this in performance of the weekend, Jason Leonard's goal. It was a lovely move as well. Just Cara Finn, just they know how to play football.
Class.
Just like Dr. Crokes. Like, I think there's an element of just knowing how to play it and having good coaches and moving it through the lines. I love watching football.
Yeah.
Move through the lines with kick pass, and it's just lovely on the eye. Cara Finn do it, Cross McGlenn do it, Joe Brolly will tell you that, Dr. Crokes do it. Portlaoise, I'd like to see them moving it through the lines with the foot a little bit too much. If you drop, you know, I think they might use the hand pass a little bit too often, but Portlaoise are capable of playing real natural good football as well, you know, like, I mean, good kick passing as well. Like Moorfield they're a credit as well. They played very attacking brand of football. Portlaoise Moorfield was a brilliant game. It was a really really outstanding game. But interesting with Cara Finn, they won without Ian Burke, like you mentioned, and they won without Dahi Burke as well, who went to Australia playing this wild geese. Such a stupid name. They call Irish people that emigrate to Australia wild geese. Is that it?
You've been. I haven't.
I don't know. I think that must be it. But he didn't play against Clonagale. So Dahi Burke is just a hurler who, if I'm around, lads, I'll play with you at football. But I'm a hurler. Don't be annoying me about this big ball, right? So, because last year he went away on the All-Star trip when they were playing an All-Ireland quarter-final against Fulham Irish in and around December time as well. So, like, Dahi just tells Cara Finn, look, I can play football. I'm a very good footballer. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. I know I'm really good and I'm absolutely on the starting 15. But don't even entertain me if there's even a challenge hurling game, because I won't be playing it.
I'll play football in October, November, and a bit of February maybe, and March if we make it.
Yeah, he's a pure hurling snob. We should try and get that onto the show here one of the days. So TJ Reid was over there, Colin Fenley too. They obviously are playing with Ballyhale next week, so they didn't play, but they went out. I'm kind of surprised that they went out as well. It depends how long they're going for. Like a week before a Leinster Club semi-final, I don't know. Like, I mean, you'd hate to miss out on it, but like, I mean, I don't know. I'd say Henry was probably wondering what to do with them there. To be back probably for Tuesday night training, Thursday night. Ah, look, I'd go myself. Look, how sure I went to feckin'
Thailand.
I'm definitely one to talk. Anyways, this wild geese has created loads of debate, right? So there's all sorts of angles people are hitting the GAA with. Now, I'm one to talk about hitting the GAA with criticism, so I'm not going to criticise the people criticising. Paul Cody, Carlo Hurler, we've had him on the show. He said two squads of 30-plus, 10-plus management teams, referees, RT panellists. And it was interesting. I would say the GAA might have paid the RT panellists to go out, or else what's in it for RTE? It's hard to know. Maybe they didn't. I just discount that I said that. So he is guessing about 100 people. So he's estimating 200,000 it costs. So we don't know how much it costs. But he says, who the fuck funds all this? And if they have so much cash, please spare or please send some down so we can try and develop hurling in some counties before it's dead. So he's saying with that 200 grand, you could pay 6 games development officers in Carlow and improve the game. I can completely see where Paul is coming from. Now, apparently it was about €40 to get into that match. Now, the crowd looked absolutely terrible. Like, I mean, I'd say they were very disappointed with the crowd.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know that from listening to Marty Morrissey, who would have just painted a picture that this is, he might as well be a GAA employee, Marty Morrissey, at this stage, but we all know that. That's not surprising. So I would say even if there was 5,000 at the game at €40 a head, that's paying back the €200,000 that they paid anyway.
Yeah.
So these things are paying for themselves. So, you know, the money thing, I'm not too sure that stands up. Like, I mean, it's given the players a holiday, which I'm all for.
Yeah.
It's playing the game. What I have a problem with it is building it up to be something that is not, which Marty was doing.
Yeah, like, and exactly, because it is just an exhibition game, but Marty made it sound like this, everything was leading up to this day in November.
Marty's start to the highlights that I watched today, it was, this is unique, this is history, this is Galway versus Kilkenny.
That's what I mean.
Like at the end of it then, he says it was a remarkable day.
Yeah. Right?
And Deignan's going along with this, like, Deignan's playing the game here as well. Like, I mean, so this is what's leading me to think maybe the GAA footed I don't know if they did. But then Marty asks him after the game, do you think there's a future in this, Michael? I do, Marty. It's here to stay. Right? So these lads are really into this now, building this up as in what a wonderful thing it was. A bloody match in Australia.
Yeah.
It's just all it was. It was a match in Australia, which might be nice for the maybe what looked on the television, the 5,000 people that showed up. Very nice to see these players. Brilliant for the players.
It's great for the players.
Which I'm all for. So, like, I'm not completely against it. But another thing is, Cora Finn were out Dottie Burke. What's more important here? So anyways, Marty asked Brian Cody the same thing. Marty's in full propaganda mode here. He's like, but does this have a future, Brian? Are you a fan of this? This is two questions in the very same question. So he asked him one after another. So Brian Cody doesn't play the same ball that that Deignan does. So Cody's just like, ah, look, we've been out here a few days. The lads really enjoyed it. Every player would be more than happy to avail of this. So that's just Brian Cody being Brian Cody and being logical and saying, ah, calm down. I'm not a fan of this. Like, what's really important is club hurling that's going on at home at the moment.
Yeah.
That's the real important hurling. This is just what is it? An exhibition game in Australia. Let's calm down.
Yeah, and like, and you say, like, it's brilliant for the players, and like, I see some of their Instagram stories. They look to be having the time of their lives. Like, yeah. You know, when you talk about Dahi Burke, but part of me likes that, you know, Cora Finn would say to him, ah, listen, it's a trip to Australia. Away you go. See you in a couple of weeks' time. I know it's a big club game, but it's nice that they can do that. But it's more than just the money, I think, that's invested in this. It's the effort and the optics that your national broadcaster are showing that, and like, you know, they wouldn't show a Christy Ring game or a McDonough Cup game. Like, they showed more wild geese all season than they did any of those. Yeah. Joe McDonough, Lorne Meagher, or anything.
Now they're tied in, right? So Buff Egan is on about this. So there's different angles. So Cody's coming at developing different counties, and in fairness to Cody, while it might pay for itself, the optics are not good. If that where's your focus, where are your priorities, is probably Cody's main point. Are your priorities this kind of stuff, or is it the Fenway Classic? Another load of vowel nonsense, more nonsense than the Wild Geese, because it's not even hurling, it's 11-a-side bastardization of hurling. So, like, I mean, it would be a fair argument to say, is this where your priorities lie, or would you rather prioritise developing the game? So Buff Egan hammers RTE. So RTE will spare no expense to go to the other end of the earth to show a Mickey Mouse challenge game. Surely they'd be better off showing county and provincial action. The Joe McDonagh Cup, which they completely ignored all year. Wild Geese Trophy, my art. Right? You can't beat that. Wild Geese Trophy, full stop, my arse. Right, so Buff Egan hammers RTE. Now, here's my take on RTE. The day I start criticising RTE for showing GEA, you would be a really big hypocrite, right? So they showed GEA. I've no problem with them showing GEA. Declan McBennett's taken over. They're locked into existing contracts, right? Now, I don't know those contracts. I know it's a 5-year contract. My argument with RTE is why at the start of the last contract, which Declan McBennett, in fairness, was not the head of sport, and he's a GEA man.
Mm.
He wasn't deciding that then. Now he's in there. He's locked in to 5-year contract. So, you know, this kind of thing, show more club games. They're not contracted to do that now. The criticism for RTE was, why weren't you back in those other negotiations? I'm being a little bit fair on Declan McBennett, because I think the next time these are up for bidding, I think RTE will go for more club games and go for more stuff. And if this is, I think I would see this as a positive, as in 2 years ago, would RTE have covered this?
Yeah, like, but maybe it's more of a GAA thing than an RTE, because
it's the GAA thing.
It's not even the club and provincial. I'm just looking at the, like, you know, could we not have put as much effort into trying to get the Christy Ring final shown on TV?
Yeah,
or, like,
the Joe McDonagh Cup final. Like, I mean, that was the higher profile one.
Could,
like,
as you've always been banging on about, can the GAA not sell the rights of that to TG Carr or something, you know, of RTE, or already locked into a contract,
sport,
or they won't show it and give it to somebody else, so we can, like, look at the amount of people watching club games as it is. Like, there's more county games that they could watch instead of this friendly. Great that they're showing the friendly, but it just sort of highlights that they're not showing a lot of other things. And
I'm trying to get Tom Ryan onto the show here before the year ends, because, like, I mean, there's so many questions you'd like to ask him about all this stuff, because RTE probably don't deserve that criticism based on the fact they're stuck into the app. Again, I'll repeat myself, they absolutely deserve criticism for not going for club games.
Yeah.
But, you know, if the last 20 years they haven't been showing club games or league games, so they absolutely deserve criticism of that. But now we have a GAA man as head of sport in RTE, I am more optimistic, and I don't want to hammer them.
Yeah.
And he might be frustrated. He said on the show he'd like to show more. But
you also have, like, a lot of GAA counties, like, getting sanctioned here recently for going away on training camps, and people told they're not allowed to train or whatever.
That's another point. I'll just quickly cut you off, because Brendan O'Brien and John Fogarty, both examiners, Brendan O'Brien's Portlaoise man, he tweeted last night, "You have to admire the sheer neck of the GAA. Some counties penalised for being in breach of the training ban, others invited to play in Boston and Sydney in games promoted by the association. Say, do as we say, not as we do." It's like, that's a clear kind of, you know, an obvious boo-boo by the GAA.
Yeah. Like, you can't do this, and if you do it, we're going to sanction you. But meanwhile, we're going to carry on, because we got a lot of money to make in Australia.
Yeah, we can do it. It's a weird one. And in fairness, it's obviously good. I thought, like, from looking at the highlights, the crowd, that's a pathetic turnout for the amount of Irish that are in Sydney. Pathetic.
Mm.
It looked like there was nobody at it at all. Real sparse, just the lower tier all the way around.
It's a strange one, because people seem, like, do you not, when you're away, like, do you not want to go to these events? Like,
but
you know, when it's an Irish thing,
this is putting it on for them. And
yeah,
the Fenway Classic, they can get 30,000 to it. So did they not promote this in the same manner, or how? Or maybe, see, there's a lot more American Irish in Boston that might go to it. Like, I mean, there's a lot of Irish in Sydney, but maybe not the same Australian Irish, if you know what I mean. There isn't second generation Irish that kind of, I don't know, the Irish have been in Boston a lot longer, basically, so they're a bigger. I thought it was a very poor crowd. I thought that could have been pointed out. It looked like a poor enough crowd.
Maybe it's the fixtures putting it on in November for them. They wanted it earlier in the year.
It was 27 degrees apparently, which wouldn't suit the players, so we're not really going to talk about that game anyway, because it was only an exhibition game that, in fairness, the players did take seriously enough, apparently, well, according to Michael Deignan, but he was in propaganda mode, so I'm not sure whether to he could have been out for a few pints with him the night before, judging by some of the things, how positive he was about it. Portlaoise obviously were very good yesterday, so they were absolutely dominant in the first half. They went in 1-8 to 4 points. The Moorfield goalkeeper had an absolute shocker. He was at fault for the Portlaoise goal, at fault for another one. He just had butter fingers, and his kickouts weren't much better. He was trying to hit Ronan Sweeney over by the sideline and just driving it out over the side.
Right.
Over the side. He did that twice. But the ones he did put down the middle, Kieran McAvoy cleaned up. Him and Kieran Lillis were dominant in midfield. So, like, I mean, really, really good performance. So Malachy McNulty said after the game, "We're playing the Leinster champions, so we wanted to hit them hard and notch up as many scores as possible." Like, and Portlaoise hit them hard. Like, they played, like I said at the start, like a team that just, their backs were to the wall here. Are we going to just turn into an also-ran, no disrespect, just another Leinster County, or are we going to be the challengers for the title against the Dublin champions? And they proved that they are, and they were a notch ahead of Moorfield last year, and I don't care what anyone says, Moorfield ransacked them at the end of that game with a goal and a point. Portlaoise looked in control until Craig Rogers got sent off. Then Portlaoise this year dominated them, really, in their own backyard, and to prove, without a shadow of a doubt, they're a much better team footballing team than Moorfield, even though Moorfield were pretty decent and battled away and got 1-1 early in the second half to get it back to 3, and then they had the wind and the crowd were behind them, and it had been a bit of fisticuffs going in off the field at half time, and it was really kind of ratcheting up. But Portlaoise, after the goal, Portlaoise responded with 3 points from play themselves to wipe out the goal, and I think that kind of burst the bubble of the Moorfield fans in the crowd anyways, where it was a bit deflating for the players on the field. But it was a brilliant, brilliant game. And without sounding too much like Joe Brolly at a Cross McGlen game, it was fantastic by both teams who played football in the right way and had some really good players on display. Ronan Sweeney, 3 points from play at his age, 38 years of age, took on Frank Flanagan at one stage, who's only a young fella on the Portlaoise team, and burned him down the sideline.
Like, yeah.
He's a sensational club player. There's nothing else can be said about Ronan Sweeney. He's just non-stop, still centre half forward at 38 for a club that's winning Leinster's. That would be unusual enough, and he's still doing it.
Life's too short to not watch Portlaoise, says Colin Parkinson. The St. Paul Mannion's coming down the road now, though, with a sniper on his left foot.
Well, that's it. He scored 2-6. The Kilmacook Crokes won 2-17-7. So, like, I mean, that is the semi-final. And you'd imagine the winner should come from that. Although Mullinahakta are a dogged team who play very defensive football and beat Road in Tullamore. And that's not easily done. They play Airog in the other semi-final. So no Longford club has ever contested a final, so there'll be a little bit of pressure on them as it is. Carlow were in the final in 2000 when O'Hanrahan's beat Nafina, surprised Nafina. That was in Portlaoise, I remember. I didn't even go up to it because I was kind of playing around that time. I'd be a little bit jealous of not being in it. So I thought it was an interesting thing. So Brian Darby got his marching orders after 18 minutes. And remember James McGivney we talked about James McGivney a couple of times on the show. The Cluxton, he hit Cluxton late, got sent off in that game. Then he got sent off in the county final. And I remember reading the name James McGivney, and then I went back and looked. Was that the lad that hit Cluxton? And it was. And then I read that Brian Darby was sent off for an altercation with James McGivney.
He got it right this time. He got the provocation.
Bloody McGivney's always in some sort of bloody action. So he didn't get sent off this time. But Brian Darby, who would not be the type of player to be getting sent off.
Yeah.
There's kind of a trend developing here, James, and I've my eye on you if you get into the Leinster final and Portlaoise get into it.
It's exciting for the Cavan footballers, who Mickey Graham's going to take them after he's coaching this Longford Champions team, like, you know. So it's almost like Louis van Gaal in the World Cup before he goes to United. He's just impressing before he takes on the Cavan job.
And yeah,
the further they go, the more exciting it gets.
The next step up. So Aughwillan lost to Ballintubber. There's no surprises there. But it was an interesting one that Michael Corry, a colleague of ours, had a really good piece about Aughwillan at the weekend, which Joe Brolly lifted without crediting poor Michael. And so four of the senior squad for the game are actually, what is it, are on the executive? No, the executive.
On the committee.
On the committee. Yeah. So is there that? Yeah, okay. So Michael Quinn, he's the chairman of the club and also a defender. Declan McGovern is vice chairman and also a defender. Morgan Quinn is the secretary and a forward, and Gerard McGovern is assistant secretary and defender. So, like, I mean, that's very unusual to have four current players taking up positions like that. But, like, I mean, suppose small clubs just maybe have to do it. And yeah. I always find that is a challenge for GAA clubs, is to find people to go into these thankless jobs. Like, I mean, I always said playing is the most important, and it is. But you get a lot of enjoyment from playing, so it's not really a selfless thing. You do it for your own enjoyment.
Yeah.
Well, now maybe these administrators do it for their own enjoyment, but maybe they do. But it is less selfless. It is more selfless than playing.
Yeah, I don't. Like, you know, I've done like a, you know, a PRO for a while and like assistant secretary for a while at my old club back home, but you don't do it for enjoyment, to tell you that. Like, you just.
And why did you do it? Did you get roped into it at an AGM, or why did you?
Yeah, like, you got asked, like, you know. And
you're gone. What can you say then?
Yeah, like, and it's just, it's one of those things where you want to serve your club. But at the time, I was taking under 16s too, you know, so I'm playing with the team, so I was doing a lot. But it is, I don't know what, it's just that sort of duty bound, like, you know, I can help out the club this way. But even now, like, you know, I know a couple of lads who are like secretary and treasurer of the club back home, and they're still playing. And,
yeah,
you know, again, they're not enjoying it, but it's just, I don't know, it's just what you do to keep the thing going. It's what it's all about, really.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like that in your club, but I wouldn't be attracted to that kind of stuff at all. I think there's a lot of politics in that. I don't necessarily like the clique that's involved in a lot of these committees and everything. It would be like, I'd find it toxic to me, being a little bit more, like, I kind of tend to say things, I'm a little bit more abrupt in how I deliver what I think. And I think that definitely rattles cages and people don't like it. And I think in a lot of GAA committees and everything, there's an awful lot of politics going on and talking behind people's backs. And I don't think there's enough honesty, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I've been sat in plenty of committee rooms as well. The meetings go on for hours because two lads are arguing. And, like, you know, everybody has their own little bit of
there's
the
agendas.
Empire.
There's
like,
agendas, yeah.
The groundsman just wants nobody playing on the pitch. Yeah. And, you know, you have the ladies' manager or the ladies'... I don't know, the chief, the person looking after the whole ladies football thing, who feels that they're not getting enough love or whatever, like, and all these things. Just at the end of the day, you have all these arguments and then nothing really gets done about it all, so it probably is just a big waste of time. Like, everybody goes back and just continues on with the jobs that they're doing.
Right, okay, so yeah, it doesn't, you're not exactly endearing me towards getting on that. So Micheál Martin was talking on RT. I might leave this until Thursday. He's talking about it's a little bit like what we talked about last week, but he's kind of hinting at the fact that they might be scrapping the pre-season competition. So that would be absolutely fantastic if they did that. A couple of other little bits of news is Peter Leahy, who obviously we had some dealings with earlier this year. He's been handed a two-year contract, so he's been confirmed at a meeting last Tuesday night. So congratulations to him. Hopefully he can get all those Carnicon girls back, and anybody that walked off the panel, he left the door open for them. And, you know, I think they should all go back. Forget about it.
Would you take it if you were him? Like,
would you take them back?
I know he's been backed a lot. Would you take the job? Like, I know he's been backed really well by Mayo, but would you want it really without all, like, the best club in the county? And they're going to have eight to 12 players.
Well, I wouldn't like to be run out of the job by what was done to me either, if I was him, for that kind of stuff to go around. You'd like to stay on. Like, you don't want the people who are trying to blacken your name like that win. Do you know that kind of way?
It's a pure stubbornness. You would just stay in the job.
I probably would. But you'd try to get them back, because, like, I mean, from what I hear, those Carnicon girls, outside of maybe one or two, wouldn't have had any problem. They were just maybe defending their teammate, who might be a bit more high profile. But anyways, sympathies to the Clark family. Paddy Clark, who's a former Loud manager, passed away. He at the weekend, he had an illness. But most people will know, in the GAA circles, will know Paddy Clark, because he would have coached clubs in Loud, Meath, Monaghan, Cavan and Dublin. And he was assistant manager to Brian McAniff with the International Rose Squad in 2000-2001. And like I said, Loud manager as well. So very sad for everybody in the GAA. And like I said, sympathies to the Clark family. Just want to finish up with this, Conan, is that player-manager. Remember I talked to Henry Shefflin about player-managers? And Henry, why didn't you just go player-manager, bring yourself on? Well, we have one anyway. So Two Mile House manager Niall Brown, he came off the bench, brought himself off the bench. I love this. Now, with 8 minutes to go. Now, if it was me, I'd be going with 28 minutes to go, right? He's straight back in. So Kildare's Two Mile House beat Round Towers of Lusk 4:15 to 1:16 in an absolutely brilliant Leinster Intermediate Football Championship. And that's coming down to semi-final stage. Courtwood from Laois are in there, and so are Horsewood of Wexford. Might mention them in performance the weekend. But he came on, he scored a point in the 8 minutes that he came on. So there you are, Niall Brown, a man after my own heart. Niall, listen, we'll get you on the show here and get you on and explain to us exactly the psychology beside going player manager and bringing yourself on.
Yeah. Do you warm up before you come on?
Probably not. No, here's another thing that annoyed me yesterday watching Port Laois. So there's a downpour, right? And this is a pet hate of mine. Say you're a sub, right? And you have this thing where every 5 minutes you're running up and down the pitch. Now, it's demoralising. You're parading yourself in front of the stand that you're a sub number one. And you know what I'm like with subs, right? So you can imagine where my head is at, that I'm running up and down in
you're
front
one of them.
I'm running up and down in front of a stand that might as well advertise the fact I'm a sub instead of actually keeping my head down and just getting on the field. So I'm basically going around with a card. Woolly Parkinson cannot make this team, right? So, but there was a downpour. Right, so I can see the theory behind it and all that. Like, I mean, if someone gets injured, you want to be warmed up. But I don't know. Like, say if you're in the first group and you go in the first three or four minutes, then you're not in. Then you don't go again for another 15 minutes, say, and you're brought on after 15 minutes. You're still cold. Like, I mean, yeah, you have to just get lucky that you've just done your warm up when somebody gets injured and you have to go on. So there was a downpour at the start of the game yesterday. I'm looking down on the sideline. I'm looking at three and four Portlaoise fellas getting drowned, and I'm thinking they're going back up now to sit on the bench. Drowned wet on a cold day, watching this, and I'm like, what is the point of that? I just don't get it.
Yeah, and like the reality is probably not for Portlaoise because it's a very good
now
club,
all clubs do it. Like, I mean, no, it's, this isn't unique to Portlaoise. Like, I mean, they all do it.
Sorry, I was going to say, like, the reality is in most clubs outside of the full back line, so you have from the half back line all the way up the corner forward, it's probably going to be the same guy coming on no matter who gets injured, because they'll make a reshuffle if they have to, but they know who's coming on first. You know, maybe it's a bit different with Portlaoise, but
no, you would have a good idea who the first two or three lads coming off for Portlaoise.
So like, let the other boys go. Like, you know, if you do need them later on, then let them come and warm up. But yeah, I don't know. There's ways of being a sub though. Like, you know, you should be standing beside the manager there, you know, just to let the crowd know that, like, yes, I'm a sub, but I'm a bit above that. Like, so I'm with the management and sort of pointing.
You can't do that now because, like, you're back in the stand now. So all you can do when you're a sub now is just stare at the manager, right? So number one, you're staring at you're playing player cam on the lads you want to come on for. Yeah. Then you've got an eye on the management team. So when they talk amongst each other, you're watching like a hawk. And then they look. Then when they look around, you have to make eye contact. The minute they look around, they have to catch.
Unzip the jacket. Every time he kicks the ball away, your jacket goes down, ready to go.
Oh, Jesus. But anyway, that was just something I noticed yesterday, and it's almost like, number one, I hate it because I play an intermediate this year, and in fairness, I had been injured, but it was a sub for the semi-final, and we were running up and down, warming up. Like, I mean, you know, early in the game, and I was like, I'm 40. I don't need this shit. I just want to, like, if I'm not playing, let me sit and watch the game at least. Don't make me do it. Don't make me do it. But then, because I wasn't starting, and with my reputation of not liking being a sub, of course I had to go along with it. And oh god. Anyways, I got brought on eventually.
You don't need to worry about, like, you know, I've been on the bench, and when you're warming up, you think everybody's watching you. But then when you're in the stands, you realise nobody, like, gives a fuck about these people here running up and down.
No, and that is a very good point, because I would literally think that everybody's watching you warm around, or the game is actually going on.
You're trying to show off to them, like, sprinting really fast. Why is he not on? Look how fast he's moving.
All right, we just have to continue on here. We could talk about this all day. Right, we'll be back with Gordon Kelly. Come here, I want you to talk us through the goal you scored in the county final after 15 seconds. I want you to tell me when you had goal on your mind.
Yeah, you've probably had a few 15 seconds experiences yourself. Break me off, show me what you got,
because I don't want no one-minute man. All right, so St. Joseph's of Milltown Malbay have qualified for the first ever Munster club final after a great win against the Nair away from home yesterday, and their captain Gordon Kelly joins us on the line now. Gordon, how's it going?
It's going good, thanks.
Good stuff. That was a surprise win for me. I'm not sure if you guys were as surprised as I was when with the result.
No, I suppose we seen it before we went down as a 50-50 game. We'd be, I suppose, going down there was a big challenge down to there. And I suppose, what's called it, a team like Nair, they'd be well known up our way. And I suppose, as a few of the other teams out there, would be Stradbally, Ballinacourt, they'd be household names for the football people in Clare. So we've seen it as a good challenge going down. But we had confidence in ourselves that we had the work put in over the last 2 weeks since the county final. So while not certain, we knew that if we went down and we performed well, that there was a chance that we come away to win.
Yeah, because I was looking, you won the county title in 2015, and that was the first time in 15 years, and you didn't perform well at all then in the Munster club. Clonmel Commercials beat you well. Was there a change in attitude this year after winning it, that you wanted to, you know, maybe take the Munster a little bit more seriously, or is that how it worked?
We won it back in 2015. I think it was our first one actually in 25 years. So, look, we enjoyed it a bit, but we did do a good bit of training before the Campbell game as well. It's just, I suppose, we went down, and I just don't think that we produced a performance which kind of which showed the work we'd put in before it. But we were adamant when we won it this year that we were going to put in the performance. And look, you can never guarantee the result, but we said if we go down and put in the performance, even if things don't go our way on the scoreboard, at least we'd be satisfied with that. But look, we're just delighted that we managed to put in the performance and get the win at the same time.
It's a strange one, really, when you win your first county title after a long time. You're trying to say you want to take it seriously, but you're still in celebration mode. You're saying the right thing, but maybe that's not quite what's in lads' heads.
Yeah, I suppose when you win it for the first time, you really don't, you know, it's all unknown territory, and I suppose you get it. Let's be honest, there's a bit of a big blow out there and a bit of excitement and stuff. But look, we did train. We had a month between the county final and the Clonmel game. And look, we did train. We trained hard. But we went down the day and we just didn't put in the performance that was there, you know. But, so we're just happy that this time we got to go down and look, put in a performance with the minimum that we had demanded of ourselves.
Yeah.
We were just happy to get the win.
Yeah, it was the goals really killed it in second half. I was reading a report, it was pretty nip and tuck for the first half of the first half, and then you took away, scored five in a row, and then the goals in the second half killed it off completely. So it was a convincing win.
Yeah, I suppose when you're into Munster, if you get goal chances, you need to take them. They had one or two chances. In fairness to our goalie, Sean O'Brien, he pulled off some great saves. And then when we got the chances now, it was a waste of windy days. I couldn't really see the goals. But the guy was telling me, like, Cormac Murray's first goal, he scored our first goal, and he actually belted into the corner, in fairness. And then Sean Malone came off the bench, and he stuck it. So, look, if you're in Munster and if you get goal chances, if you're going to win, you need to take them. I'm just happy that the boys managed to stick the ball into the net, you know.
Yeah, so the weather was that bad that you're at centre half back and you can't see the goals being scored, or is your eyesight that bad?
my eyesight isn't great. Kind of, the weather was fairly bad, but you wouldn't get a clear sight. Your body's between yourself and the goal, and you'd be kind of looking around trying to see what happened if the ball broke down and stuff. I just didn't have a clear view of the goals. But I think I'd probably get a chance to look at them back and see if the goals were as good as Cormac was telling me, you know.
Yeah, I saw a quote from you saying that you've played in more relegation finals than you have in county finals, and that you've come through a lot of tough times. But when you have that bit of history, I think this was around 2015, because trying to look it up then, you were relegated in 2012 for the 2013 season, so you played intermediate.
Yeah, that's correct. I think, including replays, I think I must have played in about five relegation finals. And we've always, I suppose, truth be told, Colin, we just weren't putting in the effort that was required, and we were just, I suppose, putting in the minimum, and we were just surviving for a few years. And eventually then, someone says, you stand in a trapdoor for long enough, you'll eventually go through it. And that's what happened to us in 2012. And I suppose, we'd always seen ourselves as a proud club, and I suppose it was a bit hard at the time, because as everyone kept telling us, you're the first team ever to go down to intermediate in the history of the club back in the 1987, you know. But I suppose then as a club, I suppose the shake-up we needed, a few people came in well at the top of the clubs. I suppose the club started working hard. I suppose then we realised that what we're doing up until then just wasn't good enough, you know.
Right.
So
okay.
We won it back in 2013, and look, I suppose as a club, we've been kind of working hard since then, even with the underage, and I suppose you see stuff has been done right for the rest of the club. You feel a better onus on you, and look, I suppose we've just been doing things better since then.
Yeah, because that's the thing, because St. Joseph's is a big club in Clare. Like, I think you're third or fourth on the Roll of Honour. You've won, I think, 11 county titles, and you just had lost your way kind of with the structures within the club and the organisation, and ended up with relegation intermediate. That was the kick up the arse and started moving forward from there.
Yeah, look, that's pretty much it. I suppose it was a big shake up for the club. I suppose we had a bit of a come to Jesus meeting within the club, and there's some harsh words said, and look, a lot of people dropped the shoulder, and I suppose we were honest with ourselves that we're doing good enough, and look, we're in a better place now, and I think even the whole club and the community and the town is much better for it, you know. Even like, we're getting great support off the club yesterday, like, it was fantastic. I think it's fair to say that our supporters probably were in the majority yesterday, which is a great thing. So it kind of shows the support we're getting from the club.
the town. It is a great story. Relegated in 12, intermediate champions 13, county champions 15, county champions again in 18, and now first ever Munster club championship. So it's been a great kind of trajectory that you're on, and I can obviously understand how the supporters are getting behind you now.
Yeah, that's true. I suppose when you've come through the bad times, really appreciate the good times, and I suppose that's kind of standing in us now. We're really enjoying it. We're enjoying training, and lads are working hard, and there's a bit of a feel good around the club, which I suppose when you've come through the bad times, you really appreciate that.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you about, like, you obviously captained St. Joseph's this year, and you were in the news a lot earlier on this year for having an unbelievably harsh suspension for very little, really, and you missed 10 games because of it, which was absolutely incredible. So it must be a really nice feeling to finish the year after, you know, missing those early games with the club, to be able to captain them to a county title.
Yeah, it does mean a lot. Like, I'm not going to be honest with you, those first few months are probably the hardest few months I put down in football. But look, I tried to put it behind me. As you said, I missed 10 or 11 games. But I suppose at this stage, I'm trying to pull the benefits out of that whole experience and trying to let it go and not to be bitter about it. And then, I suppose, missing about 11 or 12 games meant I was kind of fresher towards the end of the year, and I wasn't picking up the niggles that I would have done over the last few years. Look, I got a lot of support from the club and other clubs in the county, which I really appreciate. But to be able to, I suppose, come from that experience, being able to go up and lift the cup for the club as captain, it's fantastic, and it's what makes it kind of easier to let everything go that happened earlier in the year.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing of just letting it go. But you have a kind of a nice way the year ended. We spoke about you recently on the show, actually, Gordon, because it was around the time the Dingle selector came on and threw the box, and he ended up getting an eight-week ban. And we were referencing your suspension, where, like, I mean, you got an awful doing for the squirting water, and we've seen the video come out since then. You might just explain to anyone who hasn't heard about it what exactly happened that day.
Okay, I'll keep it quick because I don't want to dwell on that too much. It's just the game had finished, and I thought I was walking over towards watching my club man O'Cleary, and I just there was actually some heated stuff with the referee, but I wasn't involved in any of that. So I actually went in pulling players away, which I suppose we had on video we could show, but look, anyway. So I just kind of walking away, and I handed a water bottle, and I just gave it a quick squirt, as I always do, you know?
Yeah.
But I happened to go in the direction of the umpire. Look, he said it hit him. I was very, very doubtful of it at the time. And look, I just went around and said, look, sorry, I didn't mean anything by that, you know, I was just clearing the water, and that was the end of it. And look, I suppose he didn't see it that way. He put in the match report and ended up getting a 3-month suspension on the back of it, you know? But look, as I said, it's over, and now I'm kind of trying to concentrate on the positives and enjoying what's going on with the club, just enjoying the experience.
Just one question I had on that before we move on, because I don't want to dwell on it either, but you appealed it to the hearings committee and you failed on that. You didn't go to the DRA. I'm just wondering why, because you had a really strong case on the video, and you had a strong case that the video showed you pulling people away and you weren't, you know, remonstrating like everybody else.
I just kind of got a little disillusioned with the whole process. Before it started, I was taught it's not a matter of right or wrong. You need to prove that the water or whatever didn't hit him, and it's impossible to prove something like that. And I just said, it came to the stage that I suppose we're going down a legal route and you're looking for legal loopholes and all that. And I said, look, watch for this. Let's just let it be. I'm going to concentrate on making sure that I'm training well and we move on to the summer and stuff. But there was a bit of disillusionment with it. But as I said, I don't want to dwell on that too much anymore at this stage. Just move on and let it be, you know?
Yeah, no, it's true. Because, it annoys me when people who are clearly guilty get off on technicalities and legal loopholes. But, like, I would have forgiven you to have gotten off on one. So I saw the video, it was outrageous. But you missed, like I said, you missed the club games and then you missed the rest of the league. But you got back for the championship at least, just in time for the Limerick game, played that, then played against Kerry and Mark David Clifford, so you're right back into the lines then.
Yeah, look, I thought that was the fortunate thing. You hate missing league games, especially the club, because I feel like when you're with the county, you probably don't get enough time to spend with the club that time of year. So that's when I really enjoy playing the club games, but the league club games would look it wasn't to be. But look, at least I didn't miss any championship games, and the suspension finished like a week before the Limerick game, and then once that game was over, it was game after game. And look, I suppose when you really want to play the games is in the summer when the pitches are hard and you have a big game, there's more at stake. So look, if that had happened later in the year, like 3 months or the summer, it would have been a different ballgame.
Yeah, I was at the game against Kerry. You're obviously beaten well on the day, but I think you performed better on David Clifford than anybody else did during the year, if that's any consolation.
Look, I suppose I just went out and I just tried as hard as I could. Look, I went out in the Limerick game 2 weeks before that, and I tried just as hard, and I was kind of, I was getting negative feedback on it, and I went out in the Kerry game, just pretty much played the same thing, and then I was getting positive feedback. But look, that's the way it is. Things can break your way, and once you're honest, you know, you're up for a 50-50 ball, and the ball lands on your side after it breaks. you read the ball fantastically. It lands on his side, your man's taking you to the cleaners, you know? So,
yeah.
Look, that's the way it is.
Were you taken aback by how big David Clifford is? Because I met him after that game. I was in the tunnel, and I shook hands with him as he walked past me, and I went, Jesus Christ, the fella's huge for his age.
He's a big man. I think something more surprised was his pace. He's great pace. Like I was standing up beside him at the start, and it was only about a minute in, and the next thing he took off, I was going, Jesus, he's a very good footballer. He's great pace. So I kind of go on, next time I just have to watch out. I just have to be sharper to his pace and stuff. Yeah, but he's a fantastic footballer. He's a great summer, and he's right going and all start.
Yeah,
he's only one of the key players in GAA for the next 10 years. You know,
no, he definitely will. So I was reading some quotes from you around the time of the suspension, where you said that could be your last league. I mean, you're 35. You've just captained your club to a county title in a Munster club. I know you're going to tell me I haven't made any decisions yet, but reading between the lines, that's you done. But maybe you want to right the wrong of last year's league and give it one more year.
I tell you, crystal ball hasn't let you down there, Cullum. I haven't thought about it. I haven't actually even been talking to Cullum. I suppose he's given us a bit of space to concentrate in the club. And look, it'll probably be around Christmas time when things are still going with the club, or they're looking like it's breathe space around Christmas, no matter what happens anyway. And look, I'll have a chat with Cullum and see how things go there, you know?
But, yeah.
Look, we'll see how things go.
Reading a match report, you bring Brian Curtin, who's picked at centre half forward, back, and he plays in front of your full back line. So I was thinking, after looking at the Dr. Croke's highlights and the reading all about that, that you might need a few more sweepers alongside Brian Curtin when you play Dr. Croke's. Like, I mean, they got 520 and all from play. Like, they're a scary team at the moment, but like, I mean, you'll obviously have to go in thinking that you're well in with a chance, especially in these conditions and things as well. There are a lot of shocks happen in club football that wouldn't happen at intercounty level.
Yeah, I suppose that is very true. Look, we're under no illusion about Croft. They're a fantastic team. There's some fantastic footballers. I suppose, look, over the next 2 weeks, we'll just be concentrating on ourselves. And look, I suppose we have some very good footballers ourselves who've been doing it at the club. We've some lads who've been producing it in their county as well, and we'll be looking forward to it. And I suppose if we go down to a game, if you believe you can win it, well, I think you're always in with a chance. And look, we'll think that we'll have a shot, just from, I suppose, look, we know how good our lads can be.
Yeah, well, listen, best of luck with it, and congratulations on reaching the final for the first ever time. Thanks for taking the call, Gordon.
Okay, no problem. All right, thanks.
But when your legs don't work like they used to before.
I was actually coming home on Saturday morning, and I had the podcast on from Newbridge all night, and that helps the journey, to be honest. If I've ran out of Ed Sheeran songs, depends on mood I'm in. Ed's good for if you're in a sloppy mood, Ed's good to sing along to, and then if you're in a GA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on. Darling, I will be loving you
till we're 70. Paddy Power performance of the weekend, Conan. So the first one up here is Paul Catalan, who was absolutely outstanding yesterday. He got 7 points in total, and that was out of a total of 114. He got 4 from play. First point from play was absolutely outstanding. See, Paul Catalan is inter-county standard. He's an outstanding corner forward. Hasn't really got the break he probably deserved, I think, with Laois, but then didn't go in 1 or 2 years, was injured. But like, he's inter-county level corner forward. So like, I mean, he's running from the 13 position over to his wrong side, collecting a ball and under the stand, kind of hooking it back over his body, over the back. You know these fellas?
Yeah.
Like, there's just no blocking this. There was no blocking that score down. Your man was tight on him.
Yeah.
And it's just the very, very highest level of corner forwards can actually do what he, you know what I mean, what he did. He was very good on the freeze. He scored a one around the 45 metre line over. There was actually something going on with him and Brody, because Brody was coming looking for them, the goalkeeper, and I think Catalan, Paul, with the wind, fancied himself from 45, so he was telling Brody to stay where he was, and there was a little bit of a standoff, but Catalan ended up putting it over. So like, I mean,
like that.
I like that too.
Colin Rank,
he wouldn't be short on confidence, Paul, like, being as good as he is. He would have played soccer with Celtic, so like, I mean, most people know about Paul Catalan. In 09 he got Leinster Club Player of the Year, so he was outstanding. Garrett Dillon was outstanding. You might know Garrett Dillon as a cornerback for Laois. You people in Port Laois know him as a wing forward, so like, Garrett Dillon's a complete all rounder. He was outstanding. His runs in the second half really kept Port Laois kind of in the game. He's just breaking the line. He's incredible pace. Kieran McAvoy was outstanding right throughout. Big physical midfielder, dominated midfield, and can really do a job like on any kind of. He was on Daniel Flynn and he cleaned him out of it. Daniel Flynn was taken off in the first half. Remember, he was on Alan McNamee last year against Road. And these kind of, but the great thing about McAvoy is the Port Laois, whenever I was playing with Port Laois, we never had a big physical midfielder. Like, if someone had a good fetching midfielder, we'd be in trouble, right? Because we didn't really have the big imposing. But he can battle with these lads and, you know, outfetch them at times. And it's just Port Laois, along with Kieran Lillis in midfield, who's midfield obviously for Laois. Port Laois finally have a really solid midfield who won't be messed around by anyone, and they're mobile too.
So who are we picking? Is that all the nominees for Paddy Power performance of the weekend?
So Paddy Power, Portly, I'm nominating Paul Catalan, but honourable mention to the two lads. So like, I mean, that's it. Jason Leonard then for Cora Finn, he scored 2-6. So his first goal was a rocket to the back of the net, and his second one was after a beautiful flowing move which he was able to palm into the net. It was a lovely ball in, transfer off to a man running. Like, Port Laois were doing this at times yesterday. Like, I mean, it's just, it's traditional football and it's playing it through the lines, and it's just beautiful, and we see a lot more of it at club level, and when you see it played, it's just beautiful. It's beautiful to watch.
They're like a sevens team, like, you know. Yeah. They won the All Ireland sevens this year, but like, every single run is finished. Like, you know, Kieran Malloy won that ball on the byline, because when he runs, he goes the whole way to the corner and takes his man with him. Everybody's just running all over the place.
Yeah.
If you pass it, you have to keep going the whole way to goals. It's like they're always just coming in for a sniff of goal. All their points look so easy because they're just going for goal originally, and the team freaks out and you get space to pop it over. They're unbelievable. And Jason Leonard was just, on this day, the person who was the beneficiary of all those moves.
Yeah, no, he definitely was. And we do have to say that Dr. Crokes and Cora Finn avoid each other until the final. So yeah, like, I mean, there could be an unbelievable final. Crokes beat them down in Limerick 2 years ago and they shocked them.
Could be Cora Finn Cross McGlenn though. Joe Brawley will have wet dreams about this.
I don't think Cross McGlenn are there yet. I don't think they're there yet, despite what Joe says. You know, but you never know with their tradition. Like, but you'd love to see Port Laois into the mix as well. Port Laois against Kilmacode, if you've got spare time, you should go to that as well. That'll be must actually send Joe an invitation to come down and watch that and get Port Laois a nice get Port Laois a lovely write up in the paper the following week if they win. Although Port Laois beat Kilmacode and Paul Mannion played well, Joe would write the piece about Paul Mannion.
Yeah.
He loves Cross McGlenn and Dublin.
And Dublin, yeah.
So Paul Mannion, that we mentioned him, 2-6, came off after the 53rd minute. Apparently he's struggling a little bit with a muscle injury. I think it could be his hamstring, so he was feeling that and went off. But they have 2 weeks now to recover for Port Laois. So despite the amount we want, you'd like Paul Mannion not to be playing, you wouldn't wish him injury, but like, I mean, he's got the 2 weeks now to fix any niggles. And Keane O'Sullivan didn't play yesterday, so they rested him obviously to clear up a niggle or two. He's struggling with his hamstring as well, isn't it? He went off in the All-Ireland final.
They were saying after the Jude's final that Mannion was struggling then and he was playing on one leg. Imagine what he's like on two legs.
Well, that was outrageous when I read that. Then I read that Paul Mannion wasn't at full tilt after the county final, because, like, I mean, 2-6, I think he got 1-1 from play against Dunboyne. Sure, it was 1-6 from play, was from all from play, yeah, against Jude's. Sean Nolan from Hurstwood. So Hurstwood beat Rathcline yesterday in the intermediate quarterfinal. So he scored 5 from play out of 111. So that's not a bad chunk of that. He was lined out wing forward, judging by the match report. But Hurstwood finished with 12 men. So the two sendings off, I think, was one in the 50th minute, one in the 56th minute. And Rathcline had drawn level at that stage. So they clung on to extra time. The next minute the announcement comes up, there will be 11 minutes of additional time. So, like,
that's sick.
Yeah, yeah, you'll be absolutely sickened, right? So then Sean Nolan takes it upon himself to go up and score 2 points to put Hurstwood with 13 men. Then they both get a man sent off. So Hurstwood are down to 12 men and Rathcline are down to 14 men. And they hold out to win by 1 point. So fantastic stuff. We played a 7-a-side down in Hurstwood. That's PJ Banville and Lee O'Brien. You might not remember Lee O'Brien, but he would be my age, would have played with Wexford. So he was still playing actually at 40 years of age. He's playing lined out at corner forward. So
Tag Furlong's club as well,
Hurstwood is, yeah, that's right, yeah, that's right. So we played the 7-a-side down there. We're looked after really well. We actually won it out down there, but there wasn't any huge brilliant teams at the time. So Hurstwood are still in there, like I said. Courtwood are still in there. So the intermediate final in Leinster is looking pretty good. A little bit biased that I mentioned intermediate in Leinster and not in any other province, but, like, I mean, that's just the way it is. Neil McManus as well scored 9 points. 7 of them were from frees, and Declan Bogue, according to his match report, said that the frees were taken off him during the Antrim campaign against St John's and in the final against Lough Ale. So I think you'd be a little bit crazy to be taking frees off Neil McManus. But performance of the weekend, I think this weekend, I think, to be fair, it's only right that it goes to Paul Catalan for his performance. 7 points out of 114.
I wasn't expecting that one at all. No,
well, I don't see. I think he's the performance of the weekend. Has to be said, it's the only game I saw. And look, we've said this is not biased. This, I've said this from the very start. If you've performed well in the televised game that I saw or in a game I was at, you have a huge chance, yeah, of winning performance of the weekend.
There's nothing dodgy going on, but this is the only game you saw and the only game I didn't see. So, like, you know, just don't ask any questions.
This is a dictatorship. What you say doesn't matter anyway, Conan. This performance of the weekend is a pure dictatorship. Congratulations to Paul Catalan. Let's hope he can repeat it against Kilmacook Crokes. And that's it. Right, we'll leave it there and we'll be back on Thursday. So again, thanks for everyone watching on YouTube and we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Yet it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.